Hey guys, welcome to another edition of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. I'm Mark Potter, and today's episode is sponsored by Mohawk Paper. Go to mohawkconnects.com to visit one of the most exciting and thought-provoking manufacturers in the paper industry, Mohawk Paper. Today's guest is in fact Chris Harold, Vice President and Creative Director from Mohawk. And if you know Chris like I know Chris, there is no one more passionate about our industry. Mohawk has dedicated its whole strategy to supporting not only the industry, but the depth of connection that your clients make with their marketplace. As Chris and I will talk, paper really is the vehicle, no longer just the vehicle for which the message is communicated, but it is actually part of the message. But more importantly, Chris offers a unique perspective on the opportunity that is at hand for our industry. He really believes that this is our moment, our industry's moment, and I'm with him 100%, and I hope you'll give this a listen because we collectively have an opportunity to take advantage of the innate human needs that are emerging. There's a very, very loud and confusing noise with all the technology out there, and our industry is not only warm, but has the vehicle, the printed word, that drives sincerity. And we as humans are demanding that. Listening to Chris gives you a little goosebumps because he's so energetic about the industry. And I am just so proud to have him on. You should also know that Chris has committed to writing a column in Canvas Magazine for us this year. So we're thrilled about that, and we are certainly thrilled about Mohawk's sponsorship of this community. So without further ado, give this a listen and enjoy. You sound great. You sound...
Well, then I want to sound great.
You are great. You know?
Not as great as you. Okay,
no, Mutual Liberation
Society.
Hey, I was just
Mutual Liberation Society convened.
There you go. I was just reading a article off of LinkedIn, and it was David Sable, I think, and he was talking about predicting 2017, and it's pretty good because he's basically saying he believes we will see a continued shift back towards people first, and that, you know, in this digital world, everything is enabled. All our connections are enabled, yet they're just the tools. And this need for human contact is more prevalent than ever before. And mm-hmm. It allows us to kind of cocoon ourselves. And so there's kind of this, he's predicting this big backlash. Now, he also kind of says, you know, who knows? We couldn't have predicted anything that happened in 2016. But he was kind of saying it's like the death of algorithms, you know, which kind of feeds into what you're all about, because I just don't think, you know, we have this world, this marketing world, that is so enamored with the ROI and we've got to measure everything, and you know, it's just not that antiseptic. And Mohawk,
no,
and you are,
you know,
you're more about intimacy, and that's what you're all about. And that's what you guys do.
Well, we make stuff, right?
Yeah.
we make, you know, it's funny. We've been talking a lot around here about sort of our driving motivator, kind of the why behind what we do. And, you know, really at the end of the day, it does not happily include the word paper. We feel very strongly that what we've been doing since 1931 is helping make print more beautiful, effective, and memorable.
Yeah.
Right. It's really, you know, we play this role in the sort of ecosystem of the graphic arts that helps elevate print. And it just so happens that we're living in this time that I don't think any of us saw it coming, but print has, I think, an opportunity to play a really interesting role all over again, a very different role. And, you know, there's another David. Have you seen this David Sacks book, The Revenge of Analog? It's really getting some good reviews and getting some good uptake.
No, what's that all about?
Well, it's about, you know, the interesting summary that seems to be popping up on the web is, you know, he says, a funny thing happened on the way to digital utopia. Businesses that once looked outdated, from film photography to brick and mortar, are now springing with new life. So notebooks, records, stationery have become kind of super cool again, right? Or
yeah.
Actually, I wouldn't even say again. They've become super cool because they're appealing to digital natives, and, like, you know, I'm so sick of talking about millennials, but millennials. They're appealing to them not because of nostalgic reasons, but because they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're the anti-glass screen. There's something that's slower and, you know, crafted, and all the things that make them tick about experience and object quality, print does it. You know, it's funny, and that, not to be totally critical of print, and I have to be careful. I'll be doing this in my column a little bit. you know, the printing industry, it's a bit navel-gazy, which really any industry can get that way.
Right.
You know, we spend our time talking about, like, tricks and machines.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know I could do variable data?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? Nobody yeah. The consumer world doesn't. I mean, they do care, but they don't really care as much as we think they should.
Right.
You know, just because you can put some interesting goopy finish on top of a sheet of paper in a digital workflow doesn't mean anybody really wants it.
Right.
It's
so true.
You know what I mean? It's what we know, and all the people we love, and we're all part of this ecosystem and sort of family, and it's good for families to argue and push things around the table. Once in a while, so.
You know, it's funny. Well, every time you and I talk, I mean, let's face it. I mean, we could suck the air out of the room, but there's something about that. Like, I believe,
and we have.
That's right. And if you talk about the millennials. You know, they're human beings too, and I believe that it's instinctive. They are craving. They crave what you and I have. They crave having these kind of relationships. It's a human need. When all your relationships are cyber based, heck, I mean they're getting married because they've met on online dating and all that type of stuff. I think at some point the human psyche demands a sincerity to their relationships. And when you talk about writing stuff down and using notebooks, I mean, I don't know about you, but I still do it and I love it. And it may be the most important thing that I do. And, you know, not that I can't organize and write my lists and do all that stuff in Evernote or online, but writing it down does
different
something.
Experience.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
You know what's funny? We're at editing stage in copy review for the next issue of the Maker Quarterly,
right.
Number 11. And I ran into a term that I had not seen. I'll admit I had to go to Urban Dictionary and look it up. A young writer is writing about a topic and use the term meat space.
Meat space?
Meat space. And it's like this weird sort of semi tongue-in-cheek way of countering cyberspace. So if something's being successful in meat space, it means the real world. Right? Like, but right, it's funny. It's like, you know, right, those same millennials, they dig meat space. They want craft brewed beer and, you know, backpacks made by dudes that look like them in Colorado, and field notes, right?
Yeah,
like they dig that. It's meat space. It's not cyberspace is a commodity platform. They get that. That's table stakes, right?
Right.
You have to have your act together with respect to the web and mobile and whatever. You know, whatever happens on that little tiny glass screen we all carry in our pocket is awesome, super duper powerful, and table. But it's table stakes, right? You got to have that. But if you could, right, to me, the exciting thing for the printing industry is like, wait, everybody, this could be our moment, right?
Yeah.
Let's pay really close attention to what's happening societally. And I'm with you. It's like daringly set aside ROI, all the normal stuff we tend to talk about and obsess over at shows like Graph Expo and Drupa, and just take a look out at larger society and what's making people tick.
Yeah,
and
it is our moment. It really is, and you know, you and I have to just keep beating the drum. I always remember this commercial. It's funny here listening and talking about the millennials and the screens and the whole deal. The commercial where the kid is on his device and the dad puts him in the truck and they drive out, and you know, the kid's not looking up. You know, he's not noticing the landscape and the stars and the whole deal. And then the commercial goes on. When he finally looks up, you know, and puts the device down, there's an experience there and there's a connection there. And that's, in my opinion, that's the responsibility of our industry. I think it's the responsibility of all the printers. I think it's the responsibility of all the suppliers to this industry. It is taking its lumps, and the only reason it's ever taken its lumps is because of this overall juggernaut, flood of technology that has scared us. But through it all, on the other side of that complexity, is our humans, and what we need is what that kid in that truck had, and we provide that. You know, the printed word provides that. I think it goes beyond just what we do, and but it's the connections. I can go and I can see you somewhere in a trade show, and there's just constant hellos and connections, and you know, I just don't know how much that happens in other industries. We're a very, very warm industry, and we need to step up. I think that's the biggest challenge, because a lot of us just operate from fear. So,
you know what? And again, I just happen to be sort of hip deep in a lot of good writing with this latest issue of the Quarterly, which is 80 pages, FYI. It's like,
wow.
And it's kind of a little tour de force. And at one point, you know, Dora Dramalis, who's one of the principals at Hybrid, and the, you know, who started with her husband, started Hybrid Design, who do all this work for us. You know, her closing paragraph in an article about design and design thinking, it's what you're saying. And she said, as long as our target audience has a beating heart, the future is human.
Yeah.
The work that we do needs to touch the senses. It needs to be emotional. And it needs to make people feel something. And I think that's where I'm coming from when I say this could be, if we play it right, print's moment to kind of really seriously reposition itself, right?
Yep.
And is a driver in inspiring people and connecting with them emotionally, which is funny. You know, you don't often go to a big printing trade show and hear people say, you know, get your tickets now. They're selling out fast for how to connect with customers emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, screw variable data.
Oh, yeah.
Not to be disrespectful, all you software suppliers out there. But, you know, connect with people emotionally.
Well, I agree. I think that that's been the most frustrating thing for me is, you know, I deal with a lot of companies, and we have so many people that are, they're just simply trying to validate their existence, you know?
Sure.
And if they
didn't, I get that.
Sure, Sure, so do I. I mean, we're selfish creatures, and you know, sure. with the new year turning, you start to ask yourself. I've just read this one book, and it's The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Blank, and it is it's got kind of a Buddhist view of things, and he talks a little bit about when you turn the corner, when you turn the year, everybody's asking the same thing. Everybody's saying, listen, what do I want in life? Well, we all want to be happy. We all want some coin. You know, we want the loved ones to be happy and blah, 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 blah. And you know, that's no different. Everybody's answer is the same. The question is, really, he's saying, it's not what you want. It's the struggle. It's the pain that you're willing to endure. Ask yourself every morning, what pain am I willing to go through for the things that really matter the most? And that's, you know, I translate that back to business, and companies in general, they're looking for that immediate gratification. I want to be happy now. I want the money now. I want the return right now. And it doesn't work that way. You know, you've got to invest and build relationships over the course of time, and it takes time. I just literally, before we got on here today, I was talking to a printer and about investing in building relationships and doing some content, and boy, it's tough. And you're saying, but this is what you have to do. You've got to invest the time to demonstrate that you're someone that they like and trust. I mean, that's still the dynamic in the world, that it's hard to connect with people. And print really does, in a very electronic world, it allows us to get to them in an intimate and unbiased way, does it not?
It does. Yeah, I think it totally does. You know, I may have bored you with this story before because I've told it a bunch of times, but probably a year ago, maybe a little bit more. One of our people, one of our reps sent me this beautiful, beautiful, big, like 9x12-ish lookbook, perfect bound, you know, classic, you know, lookbook project, perfect bound, full bleed everywhere, killer, killer photography, printed on Mohawk, super fine. Seriously well designed, in you know, what blows my mind to this day, it's still I pull it out all the time, show as an example, my dog-eared copy. It was for YouTube, for Google's YouTube business, and it was created as a sales tool to deliver data. So the data charts are like these spectacular typographic pages that literally deliver data. I mean, Google has a pretty powerful data delivery platform.
Right.
But they have, in my huge, huge kudos to them, they have the ability to step back from their own digital clutter and say, okay, how do I cut through my own clutter?
Mm-hmm.
We totally respecting the space they're in and that they sort of like govern. They reckon with printing as being a very powerful way to connect with, mind you, so they're delivering data to encourage sales, to right? And they're delivering information through print, which is super interesting, right?
Oh, yeah.
Google.
Yeah.
They could slice and dice data a million different ways. But in this case, they took that moment and said, okay, this data set, A, let's curate it, and B, let's memorialize it in a format that's like a keepsake, right? It feels like, it really reads and feels like a coffee table book. Like, okay, we got that. We know how to do that collectively in the graphic arts, right?
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? I think it's crazy amazing. I watch my kids and you know, we're big hockey fans and I watch them. Mm-hmm. We got this this book and it's a coffee table book about the Penguins winning the Stanley Cup last year, and they'll page through it. I mean, they'll page through it constantly and look at these pictures, and I'll see them and I'll look over and they're staring at these pictures. Now look, we've got thousands of pictures on our phones and on our computers. And yet, you know, they may scroll through those every once in a while, but they're still spending time with that book. I think it's fascinating. My son is so into cars, and he gets the Car and Driver magazine. I mean, he knows everything about cars.
Yeah.
And so I find it fascinating. I mean, we're so addicted to what's the latest. And, you know, we've got this world of, you know, we talk a little bit about, you know, people trying to validate their existence, and we get addicted to the next thing, and we think it's some big silver bullet, but it's not. And print, you know, as evidenced by, you guys are saying since, you know, 1931, but evidence is the longevity of print and the printed word has something deeper to it. And that's sustainable. We still need the relationships. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that the social networks are, you know, they still have a role. I mean, they're obviously important, but they can make the world really antiseptic, and print brings it back home a bit. And, you know, so anyways, I love it. And you and I can probably, you know, go on and on and on. So how about internally? What do you guys, so you're obviously committed to the industry, print, this concept. You obviously believe heavily in doing the right type of content, the content that matters, rather than being self-promotional. You're doing content that matters. What do you guys talk about internally? I mean, especially as we turn the year, what do you guys see in the industry as significant trends or changes? And maybe talk a little bit about your ambitions.
Well, you know, one thing that we, I could come at that a couple different ways. One thing that I would pick up on as a thread from 2016, you know, we published the Maker's Field Guide to Texture and Color.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 115 pages of tutorial goodness that basically states the case for materials and the role materials play in printing, specifically paper being the material, obviously, that we make. And it has been so fascinating to see the reaction to that. So we you know, based on some data and a lot of instinct and gut, which I think can be a really super powerful way to operate, we kept hearing back from, you know, the people we speak to in the market, which would be designers and the printers who serve designers and the needs of designers and creatives, that really kind of everybody needed some re-education, right? Like, how do we use this fancy colored textured stuff? Like, how does it fit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we published this book, and it was a collaboration with Hybrid in a whole mountain of work. And the reaction has been incredible from both printers and creatives. Basically, you know, in summary, they've been saying, wow, we needed this, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was one printer who will remain unnamed who, you know, one of our sales guys presented the book to his entire team, all the salespeople. And I'd call him, you know, sort of a good, solid, mid-sized, successful printer, in U.S. printer.
Right.
And so there's maybe 15 plus people in the room. At the end of the presentation, the owner of the company stood up and said, ladies and gentlemen, we have done ourselves and our clients a disservice by not paying attention to the role materials play in defaulting to a couple common denominators. We need to change that. Like, oh, wait,
wow.
I guess we struck a nerve. And mind you, he's one of many situations like that where we have heard people express that verbally and then have literally seen people take some of the strategies we laid out in the field guide and imitate them. And I mean imitate in this most positive way. Like say, dang, I'm going to match texture and content to further undergird the brand strategy around this particular lookbook or brochure or whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still, you know, I think the market is still digesting that information we put out there, and we're processing that feedback. So that's one thing we think about a lot, like, okay, wait, we really struck a nerve in the marketplace by kind of, if you will, like creating a path to print, like a new, like clearing the overgrown brush that happened during the tsunami of web stuff and digital, and said, okay, wait, you can do this. You can make print more beautiful, effective, and memorable by carefully selecting materials early in the process, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we think about that a lot. Well, quite honestly, we think of our, you know, we're talking a lot about what's our driver. What, you know, when we started, I started talking about this, you know, our DNA, in our DNA, we can't shake it, is what we make on our three paper machines is intended to elevate print and make it more beautiful, make it more memorable, make it more, you know, effective in the role it's playing in a marketing campaign or, you know, whatever, direct mail.
Yeah.
So we think about that a lot. We're thinking about how can we help rewire the ecosystem to understand the role materials play and how print can be even more through, mind you, all the incredible technology that exists out there. You know, whether it's digital printing or finishing techniques or whatever the case may be, how do the materials fit in that mix? We spent a lot of time thinking about that.
Well, I mean, and that's, I can't remember, it might have been our friend Bart and I were talking about it, and I don't know if he said it or who said it, but it's not, you know, paper is not the vehicle that transmits the message. It is part of the message. You know, that's a big deal. It says a lot, and I just don't think that that's ever going out of style.
Right. How do you move? And this is tough for the print community. And guess what? I understand why. But how do you shift your thinking in 2017 and moving forward to look at paper as not a cost center, but really a value add? Like, how do you go, okay, whoa, wait, I have this tool set that I'm not paying close enough attention to. It's not just about, you know, we'll look at on the 10 color perfecting press or the Indigo 20,000. But what kind of tricks can I pull out of that tool set that will help elevate the print job and, you know, deliver, you know, make a happier client and maybe even make some more money, heaven forbid.
Yeah.
By moving away from paper strictly and exclusively as a cost center.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm with you. I mean, it is a lot of times it's doing the opposite. I always talk about, you know, I loved Seinfeld and so remember the episode where Costanza does the opposite of what comes natural. And he ends up getting the girl and getting the Yankee job and the whole deal. I call it my Costanza philosophy. A lot of times it's do the opposite of what everybody else is doing. You know, when I went on to launch Canvas, it was, I literally, people looked at me like I was nuts. Like, what? Oh, you're gonna launch a printed magazine for the printing industry. And they all kind of looked at me, good luck with that. But yet that's how we built a following, and there was an intimacy, and I believe, you know, combined with doing the right kind of content, the stories that actually people want to read, it allowed us to, you know, be transparent and be vulnerable. So it's funny, you said something earlier, I was thinking about, you know, you were talking about this wave, the tsunami of technology. Gosh, I can't believe it's 2017. I remember I was in grad school and we were doing something on e-commerce, and there was an article in our research that we came across, and it was right in the midst of the .com boom. So I remember that. I mean, it's crazy, but that was 17 years ago, right? And we were dealing with this then. And it was, okay, here come the dot-coms, and their whole idea was, we're going to disintermediate. We're going to take people out of the channel, the whole deal. And there was this article, and it had this this chart or this curve, and it said you're going to see this great boom over the first, you know, couple years, and it's going to be this peak of dot-coms, and then there's going to be this tremendous fall off, right? This was in 1999, so it had not yet happened. And they said it's going to go up and it's going to go way down. And then over the course of time, there was the long tail. There was the long curve, yeah, yeah. But it was really slow. And it was, so you went into the bottom and it was called the trough of disillusionment. But then over the course of time, e-commerce, for example, at that time was just adopted into commerce. It became part of the fabric of our world. And it feels like with this technology, it's all been a little bit of that, you know? Social networks, bam, oh, there, this is the way to go. And everybody's just, you know, junking traditional marketing, and we're going to put all our money in there because it doesn't cost anything. And, you know, it's all social marketing. We're going to hire people. And then bam, it's kind of fallen off the map. But yet it's still part, now it's still part of the world. It is interesting, and print kind of stands the test of time, and that human interaction, that human engagement stands the test of time. And companies like Mohawk stand the test of time because they've invested in that, they've believed in that, and they've preached that. I mean, do you guys take a lot of pride in the fact that you've seen, I mean, because you've seen a lot of people come and go, a lot of competition come and go, you know? Do you guys talk about that?
Well, I think we're in a little bit of a self-reflective moment right now because, we've seen the competition come and go largely because we've gobbled up some of the competition, right?
Right.
Beckett and Via and, you know, all that whole little Smart Papers, all that galaxy of what used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, it used to be probably, I'm going to get the number wrong, but maybe 6 or 7 or 8 mils.
Crazy.
Right?
Yep.
The products we're making today and the things we go to market with 26 years ago when I started here would have been made by at least half a dozen paper mills. Yeah. They're all made here. So anyhow, I think what we're thinking a lot about here is we really have a consistent DNA that goes back to 1931. And it's always been about reaching for what's next in terms of materials with this kind of kooky, obsessive dedication to materials and craftsmanship. We've always kind of sought to make printing better, right? We haven't always articulated it that way,
mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, I have to kind of like, I've been taking sort of inventory of certainly of my 26 years here, and as in a look back, it's like, yeah, I mean, what's common is whether it was the Yale graphic design program sending their people here in the, you know, the 80s, 70s and 80s, many of whom became design thought leaders, they walked out of here learning about papermaking and went out and became the acolytes for Mohawk Superfine. Because
mm-hmm.
it to them was just the most beautiful, luscious paper that made every project look better.
Yep.
It's like, wait, that's interesting. So it's like kind of like if we're trying to stay true to our roots and our DNA, that helps. I think that's what's helped define our success and longevity. We want to be around for another more decades.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like, let's be here for the 100th anniversary of Mohawk.
Yeah.
2031.
What, I've never really, let's get to some important stuff. Let's talk about you. What, so 26,
yikes.
You've been there 26 years?
Yeah, 1990, September.
So give me the chronology, you know, or the...
The dreaded resume?
Yeah, I want to know, yeah, let's go through the biography.
The bio?
That's right. You grew up where?
I grew up in upstate New York. I grew up in Oswego, New York.
Oh, so you haven't strayed
Ontario.
Far from home.
No, I've kind of made a big, giant, weird, geometric shape, you know, growing up there and going to undergrad school at SUNY Oswego, actually.
Oh, yeah.
right there, hometown towny guy.
Yeah.
It, you know, studying art history of all things, and moving on, art history and art sort of printmaking and photography, and then moved on to RIT. Interesting in the photo school. And I used to walk by the first floor, big glassed-in web press and printing presses, and say, "What the hell do those guys do?"
Interesting. That's hysterical.
I totally ignored printing, and I was in the midst of great printing educators and printers, right?
Unbelievable.
Left there with a Master of Fine Arts, thinking I was going to be a college professor, which didn't pan out. Then, you know, of long, probably terribly boring story short, you know, ended up working in the mid-80s, 85, out of necessity to get a job.
Right.
At a photo finishing lab. And it was a big professional photo finishing lab. It was serving the needs of graphic design firms and, you know, doing pre-print, right? Think about it then, 8x10 transparencies that were scanned by printers to do design work, right?
Yeah.
We were processing those transparencies. We were doing overflow work for Kodak, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that same very interesting entrepreneurial guy that owned that company called Century Color Labs in Rochester, he started, wait for it, a desktop publishing service bureau. And he said, "You're the kid with the master's degree from RIT. You can be the employee." I'm like, "What? Like, what is this?" So we had 5 Mac computers network together and a Linotronic output device and 2 AB Dick printing presses. It was like really rudimentary digital workflow. We had no freaking clue what we were doing, right?
Right.
And I was like the guy that ordered ink and bought paper and called this weird company called Adobe to order font diskettes because Palatino wasn't rendering, right?
Right.
And we decided to move back to be close to family. We had one baby, and I got a job with a paper merchant because I said paper's kind of cool. It's a little creative and kind of interesting.
Right.
And worked for them for a couple of years. It now is Verative, but it used to be an old American company called Allen & Corey. Got snapped up by Mohawk. They said, "Do you want to come work for us?" in 1990, and that's the night, you know. Again, it's a long kind of a story here too. But did a sales job for a while, and then for a number of years, 7, 8, 9 years, and then focused on digital printing,
right.
Digital printing for us specifically. And that's how you and I probably first met each other.
Yeah, when did you get? I mean, you guys jumped into the digital way before anybody else.
Absolutely, we jumped in head first and launched mid-90s. So really, 20 years ago. We started farting around with making some papers, like we were coding options with this crazy stuff called Sapphire for Indigo. You know, we really didn't know what we were doing there. And you saw digital coming, and Tom O'Connor Sr. at that point was CEO, and he gave us a lot of leeway to work on that. Because at that point, Mohawk had very little going on in terms of toner-based printing, and mind you, toner-based printing wasn't really about 4-color at that point anyway.
Right.
So we dug in and really dedicated resources. 1998, we launched a full line called, appropriately, Mohawk Digital Papers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, borrowing from the core, Superfine and Navajo and so on. And that's May 1998 we launched. Now we're, what's it, it'll be 19 years with a focused product line and effort in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Took us a long time to make a difference, but today it's a big, obviously a big chunk of what we do. So
you've had a lot of fun. I mean, obviously everybody who knows you're crazy passionate about it. You've met a lot of good people, a lot of great relationships over the years, and you as an organization have relationships throughout the channel, and that's something that's near and dear to you guys, right? That you know, it's not just about who spends the money on the product, you know, cuts the check for the product. It's, you know, you got to go upstream a little bit, right?
You know, absolutely. Our success, just to isolate stay with the digital bit, you know, our success in digital is in direct proportion to the amount of time we spent in places we shouldn't be. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Like I would be at these, you know, I'd be out of my depth at some meeting of the Heidelberg Digital Imaging Association with these bespectacled 30-year-olds from Germany who were inventing stuff. And they're like, you know, what are you doing here?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I make really beautiful paper, and I think you need to pay attention to it because I think it could make this amazing press even more, the results really amazing. So, you know, I think that's one example. Is Mohawk has always had a big appetite, whether it's, you know, decades and decades and decades of entrenched engagement with creatives who drive the need for print, mm-hmm. or the digital mm-hmm. example where we really spent time on the equipment side, kind of like embedding ourselves in the technology as it developed. Or, you know, today, right? I mean, today we're, you know, we 3 years ago or so, we said, okay, let's really put our back into delivering content to the creative community, assuming that they can go on the web and find out product details.
Right.
And we went there, and, you know, the Maker Quarterly has been a great success for us, and I think given us, you know, kind of like, I feel like the creative community is paying attention in a way they hadn't been,
mm-hmm.
With all that happened disruptively in terms of the graphic arts, and are we going to do print anymore? Is it all web? Whatever. And I think it's allowed us a kind of a platform to not only deliver interesting content, but in so doing, delivering really interesting printed samples, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And out of that comes really a kind of a cry from them saying, wait, tell us more. Like, tell us more about how to print. And that's really was in some measure the genesis of the Field Guide to Texture and Color.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's near and dear to my heart, this whole idea of the publishing process. And, you know, we've seen it specifically this year, and you know, we've seen an ugly media on any side, whatever side of the fence you sit on. I mean, it's been ridiculous. And you've got all this proliferation of tools, and everybody's got a pulpit, and so to me, it's interesting because it was Warren Buffett that said a few years ago, he says, you know, the trend will be for brands to buy media companies. In other words, you know, there'll be a push for brands to start doing their own content. And there's this whole push around content marketing. And that scares me because I understand it, but it could be the next QR code or social marketing. It could be, oh, this is the next buzzword. But if you look deeply into the publishing process, and it's obviously tightly married to the printing world, is that if you do it with great sincerity, it is the marketing process. You know, if I go out and interview people and regurgitate that back to a market that looks a lot like those people in a visually pleasing way, there's a chance that could grab their attention. And in a world that doesn't want to necessarily have you knocking on their door, you know, we're a much shyer group of people. If I'm able to digest something that's a little bit, that is unbiased and organic and is about me, then I'm apt to read something from there again. And that's how you start to build that relationship. So, you know, I applaud companies like Mohawk who, you know, it is very unbiased content. And it is, look, I'm just an executive sponsor. This is the right thing. You know, you've always done that. There's a few companies out there that have always done that over the course of time where they've educated. They've just said, look, I need to educate. I'm going to put thoughtful content out there and really unsell. This is not about me. This is about them. And now over the course of time, does it make people warmer towards you? Does it make them want to reach out to you? Absolutely. But that's that.
Yeah, you know, I think it's being true to for us to who we are. And it's, you know, we can talk about product till, you know, we're blue in the face, but mm-hmm. that's really the what. But it's kind of expressing the why we get up and do this every day. And, you know, even, you know, whether it's our guys on the paper machine in Waterford, when we say, you know, treat this project like super fine, they know that that means the utmost attention to detail.
Yeah.
Because they're craftsmen, right? I mean, and that's kind of runs through the organization. So with the content delivery, I think it's super important. If you're going to do, you know, air quotes, content marketing, I think it's super, super important to remain true to who you are. And if you can express that, sort of like who you are, that's why people will want to engage. I mean, it's Apple, right? I mean, I don't buy an Apple devices because I don't look at the details on the speeds and feet, right? I don't. I'm kind of like buying into a culture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's compelling. I mean, that's good. That's just smart marketing.
Yeah, I'm all.
I think
with
it's even
that.
More. Yeah.
I'm just all in with the, you know, Apple brand, right? So you got me. I mean, it's just like somebody saying I'm all in with the Mohawk brand. You know, there are designers and agencies and printers that you know have relationship with a guy like Chris Harold, or they go, I just love Mohawk, they put out this information, and over the course of time, you know, they start to define themselves in some way, small way or you know, by using your products, just like Apple. That's the game winner, is that they know
Absolutely.
That you're committed to this industry. They know that, you know, you're passionate about it, that you're going to put the stuff out that matters. And it goes way beyond your products. Yes, I mean, the products are great, but it goes beyond that. I think that's – so and first of all, I like, you know, my favorite part of this is listening to the story and the history of people, because we've lost that too. That's why I asked you about you, because is that there's magic in that. You know, there's magic in looking back, and you know, we don't even do that for ourselves, let alone share that with one another. And you know, it's painting a picture. It's thinking about, you know, those Macs tied together back in the day, and
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And trying to picture.
Yeah,
that
wasn't by design either. It sort of happens. It's like the process. It's funny when I say it now. It's like, holy crap.
Yeah.
26. That's not bragging. Like, oh, 26 years is a long time. But when you piece it all together, it's like, oh, wait, okay, that journey makes sense.
Oh yeah,
it's
like telling my kids, like, yeah, this is. I used to use what's called a typewriter.
But oh, forget it. Yeah.
But there is magic in that understanding, and I do fear that our world sometimes forgets that. You know, you just can't pile on to what's happened in the past. You need some knowledge of what's happened in the past. You know, that's true knowledge, and that gives you a better understanding and allows you to innovate. And so I appreciate that. So, look, last question, because otherwise you and I are going to go half a day. So what do you think? Tell me what, you know, you and I are like Don Quixote, you know? Mm-hmm. We believe in the same thing, and, you know, what do we need to do? I mean, is it just keep beating the drum? You know, what kind of things? Because this industry, like you said, it's their moment. You know, I felt like it's been their moment for a long time, and maybe, but I don't want this industry to get down on itself. I want them to realize that this is a remarkable opportunity that we have to help people engage and connect more deeply with their marketplace, you know? So how do we continue? I mean, obviously, you know, I'm thrilled that you're going to have a column in Canvas, and I think people are going to love that. But overall, what's your advice to all of us?
I think it, you know, right. I mean, I can speak for one aspect of the ecosystem we all live in the graphic arts, and that's materials, right? I mean, because we're papermakers. And I think that, again, looking at the response we've gotten by publishing something that's very material strategy driven, the field guide, and hearing what creatives and the printers who serve the needs of the creatives have been saying, there's the moment. It's like, oh, whoa, wait, everybody... We've all been so beaten up over the past, you call it, 10 years, whatever, 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it feels like we've reached equilibrium, right? We're where we are, like everything's like bottomed out, hopefully. And it's like, wait, there's a moment here where we can really celebrate the craftsmanship that's just sort of who the printing industry is. And one aspect of that is by leveraging every element in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So materials are what we speak for. And what we're seeing is a new generation of print buyers, for lack of a better description, whatever hat they wear, whether it says graphic designer, brand owner, marketing new guru, they're hardwired. Notice I've not used the word millennial, but if they're hardwired to appreciate materials, object quality, craftsmanship, celebrate that all day, all day. And oh, by the way, be careful not to just fall in the trap of talking about your equipment portfolio. Make sure you connect with them in meaningful terms, like English. Right? Like, here's what we can do. Demonstrate what you can do.
Yeah.
You know, versus I have a new Stitcher that runs at this speed. Speeds and feeds don't win the day.
No. I love that. I love that. You're right. It needs to be a celebration. They need to celebrate our ability overall to connect people more deeply. And you're right. It's not about speeds and feeds. It's about beautifully put, eloquently put, of course. And you the man. I really appreciate you doing this, man.
No,
I think it's great.
And awesome. No, I appreciate it. I'm super, super excited about this column.
Me too.
Column one, coming your way.
I love it. It's going to be great. Well, it's going to be a great year. Send my best to Bart and the team. I will look forward to, you hitting your deadlines, yo.
I will. Promise. That's a promise.
All right, brother. Thanks, Chris.
I can George Foreman guarantee that. All right, thanks, Mark.
I appreciate it. See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed this edition of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. A reminder that this episode was sponsored by Mohawk Paper. Visit mohawkconnects.com to visit one of the more exciting paper companies in the industry. Understand that Mohawk started back in 1931 and that they are committed to leading this industry, innovating within this industry. They've taken a bold stance on the environment. They were the first U.S. paper mill to match 100% of its electricity with renewable wind power. And they are the first U.S. premium paper mill to shift toward carbon neutral production. And since their work back in the 1940s with Yale to perfect Mohawk Superfine, they have been collaborating with equipment manufacturers, designers, printers to enhance and create a robust digital printing world. So Mohawk is really ahead of the curve on that, and I can't thank them enough for sponsoring this episode. My thanks go to Chris Harold, who clearly is a passionate supporter of our industry and someone that I hope we can all fall in line behind, because he understands that this is in fact our moment. So thanks to them, and thanks to you for listening. Happy New Year. Let's go get them. This is our moment.